It's Marketplace Tech for Monday the 18th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today we celebrate the birthday of civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. While he was most known for his work on issues of inequality, a lesser-known speech of Dr. King's nearly 50 years ago at the National Cathedral in Washington, D.C. had, it turns out, some interesting commentary on technology.
In the sense it is a triple revolution. That is a technological revolution with the impact of automation and cybernation. Then that is a revolution in weaponry with the emergence of atomic and nuclear weapons of warfare. Then that is a human rights revolution with the freedom explosion that has taken place all over the world.
That from his speech on March 31st, 1968, Carsonia Wise-Whitehead is a professor at Loyola University in Maryland. She joins me now to talk more about this. Carsonia, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Tell me about this technological revolution and moral revolution that Dr. King spoke about back in 1968.
What's really interesting about Dr. King's speech is the exact same speech he gave in 1965 when he gave the commencement address at Oberlin College.
Uh-huh.
And he was beginning to lay down this platform talking about the ways that we need to challenge ourselves to be better.
Let's actually listen to another cut from this speech, Dr. King talking about how far we still have to go.
Through our scientific and technological genius, we have made of this world a neighborhood, and yet we have not had the ethical commitment to make of it a brotherhood.
What does that make you think about in the world of 2016?
There are really two major issues here. One is that the internet has become a place where we can be anonymous. So issues that we are not willing to address into people's faces, we're willing to take them up online. The other reality, which I think is even more important, is looking at the people behind this technology. And this divide that Dr. King is talking about, when we apply it to 2016, we look at the real figures of the people that are in charge of technology. I mean, there was a huge debate in Silicon Valley for the last year around diversity. So I think it's important to talk about the ways in which it impacts us both individually and as a community.
Dr. King also spoke about the great number of poor people living in the country. Now, those aren't obviously directly connected, but it's an interesting commentary as well. Let's listen to this.
And the tragedy is so often these 40 million people are invisible. Because America is so affluent, so rich. Because our expressways carry us away from the ghetto, we don't see the poor.
Do you feel like technology plays a role in what he's talking about there as well?
Technology gives us a vision of what people think the world looks like, and that is not the case. And technology should be a place where we can all meet on equal footing. But if you don't have access to a computer, then you are outside. And if you are outside at this moment, the ways in which technology impacts our lives, if you don't know how to use it, if you can't interface with it, then you are completely outside and may be outside for quite a while.
Carsonia Wise-Whitehead is a professor of communication, African and African-American studies at Loyola University in Maryland. She's also the author of Letters to My Black Sons, Raising Boys in a Post-Racial America. Carsonia, thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
By the way, today is also a National Day of Service, and there's a growing ecosystem of apps that aim to help connect volunteers with activities and contributors with worthy causes. One of them, a Salvation Army app that lets you contribute from your phone with a ring of the bell. We've posted a list of other service-related apps at facebook.com/marketplacetech. Every tech company that allows users to post their own content also has to deal with harassment and hate speech. Whether it's thanks to policy or some other trend-bending factor, they are also issues that are constantly evolving. Twitter has been adapting its rules to those behaviors since 2009. Motherboard contributing editor Sarah Zhang has made it one of her missions to document this, and she joins me from San Francisco to talk about it. Sarah, can we say that the rule changes have been positive?
I think that a lot of these changes, like, you can really see why they were necessary, but some of them, you know, are potentially a little problematic. Like, you have one that's about, it bans promoting terrorism, and it's, what does that mean?
Is it a retweet?
Right. I mean, the other thing is also that Twitter, and they've said to me that they don't ban hate speech, but they've pretty much banned hate speech. Twitter calls it hateful conduct, and hate speech is actually is protected by the First Amendment in the United States. Hate speech, however, is banned in Europe. It's a change that's kind of rolled in because Twitter has had to expand out overseas.
What's the most interesting specific piece of information that you found while looking at all of this stuff?
The biggest change that came from the newest update was the preamble, that there was a preamble to the rules that had been in place for something like 6 years, and then it just recently changed. And the preamble was basically an articulation of Twitter's philosophy at the time, where they say that they don't actively monitor and will not censor user content, except in limited circumstances. And that sentence is gone now. It's very different from what it was. They don't use the word free. They say everyone should have the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. Like, that's not quite the same thing.
Sarah Zhang is contributing editor at Motherboard. Sarah, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can follow us on Twitter, and let me assure you, we do play by the rules, at Marketplace Tech, and I'm at The Brock Johnson, and that's tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.